You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca, Alberta's only regulated online gambling website. Use the promo code, and you get a new one every month, Greger50, and you'll get a free $50 play only at PlayAlberta.ca. And we're joined by gold medalist Lori Ann Munzer, who, of course, won in the Summer Olympics. But anytime the Olympics come around, even though it's been a few decades since you won, Lori Ann, I'm sure there's still the excitement. It probably brings back a lot, especially when you're a gold medalist, probably brings back a lot of good memories for sure. The preparation. So we're literally a month out from the start of the Olympics.
28 days.
I know some athletes will start to go over depending on where they're at, acclimatize themselves with the time zone and everything. How early do you go over?
Well, I think it all depends on, are you team, are you pairs, are you individual? And it's a little bit different for each sport and each athlete. I know that with the time zone change, you probably want to go over with a minimum of 2 weeks, if not four or more. If you're able to, the better it is, because you're able to just make those adjustments. Some of the athletes are really slow at bouncing back of going, okay, well, Milan is how many hours ahead of us? What are they, about eight?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is exactly.
I think it's eight or nine.
Yeah. And to be honest, well, you're shifting ahead. Mm-hmm. So, right now it's almost 3 o'clock. So it's almost 11 o'clock, time for dinner over there. So there's a few different changes.
Alberta is 8 hours behind Milan.
Okay. Yeah. That's perfect then.
So 6 hours for people out east.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's just your, I guess, biorhythms, your natural rhythm. You're going to have high times, low times. When are you the best energy wise? And then also looking at, when are you competing? When are you racing? That plays a big thing into it. Plus also your training times, because here in Canada or wherever it is that you're training, you usually get carte blanche. You can train whenever you want, as long as you want.
Yeah.
However, when you go to the Olympics, you have got a finite. You've got a finite. It's not infinite, but you've got a finite amount of time. Like when I was in Athens, we only had a 2 hour track time, and it was calculated. If you were on the track a minute before, 10 minutes before, they would yank you off.
Really?
Literally. And then if you went over, it was like they were, waving the flags, calling you off, trying to get you down. And sometimes you just wanted to squeak that one more effort because of the rest period time. That was really important, but you didn't have a choice. And it was just, okay, it's do or die. This is what I've got. Sometimes the training was first thing in the morning when, an afternoon is a really nice time because, well, it's just the nicest part of the day, especially being outdoors.
Right.
But it's like, okay, you're going to have a number of, we call them distractions, that you have to contend to. Number one, you're at the Olympics. Like, holy moly, that's a whole other ball game.
Yeah.
Number two, you're in the Olympic Village. Number three, where's the cafeteria? Right? Where's laundry? When I was in Athens, when I was in Sydney in 2000, they had the internet trailers, and you would literally go to they were like the ATCO trailers.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had computers. I mean, we didn't have the cell phones today or the technology, but it was different things. So you start to get into the routine, like what's in the village? How do you get around? How far is the cafeteria? In Sydney, Australia, I think there was like seven cafeterias. There was one that was open 7:24, but there was literally a bus that would drive you around the village to take you wherever you needed to go.
Yeah, it's interesting because I talked to Connor McDavid about, and it sounds like hockey, speed skating, and figure skating are kind of like in their own hub. And so they're not in like a village because like this, it's 6 hours away to some of the other things. Like it's really spread out, this one. So it probably won't have that same experience of some Olympics where you have everybody together, which is it can just be exciting, right? It does. If you're part of Team Canada, like, yeah, you're part of the hockey team, but you're a figure skater. All of a sudden, those figure skaters are high-fiving the snowboarders, and which is awesome, and you get to know different people, but you're part of the team. And if one person wins an Olympic or one team wins an Olympic medal, everybody's fired up in your house, right? So,
absolutely.
I think not having them all together kind of sucks in a way, right? I think a little bit, but
that's another perspective too, because it's like, well, what is the Olympic experience? Do they have two athlete villages? Do they have two Olympic villages? And I think the answer is probably yes. I mean, I haven't seen all of the logistics.
Yeah, it sounds like they have a few, according to Connor.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is like, well, are the venues ready? Are they all ready? And some of them.
Yeah, they're always last minute. I saw that Chris Johnson was tweeting out, they're playing a hockey game on the rink today.
doing some practice stuff. So they got a month. Like, as usual, people might have overreacted a little bit. Shocking. But, so they were running through it. Like, yeah, they had to stop because there was a hole in one of the places on the ice. Well, yeah, you got a month to figure it out. So that's why you do these sorts of things. So
totally.
Now, maybe some of the stands might not be complete, so that's not ideal. But
Even more time.
Yeah.
You got even more time. As long as you're ready an hour before the gates open, you're okay.
Yeah.
And as long as everything's bolted in, like literally.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's like, okay, if there isn't the seating, you can always stand. As long as it's safe.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah. Like there's, and really not to be selfish, but from an athlete's perspective, you're like, you know what, if they have 7,000 seats or 17,000 seats, it doesn't change my preparation as an athlete.
No, it doesn't. The one most important thing though about the venues is as an athlete, when you're waiting or, on deck, like in baseball, is where are you? And is that area, cordoned off? Is it set? Is it safe? Is it ample enough for you to warm up?
And then what about testing? Do you only do testing after you compete, or do you have to do testing because the random drug testing? So how does that work at the Olympics? Does it only happen after you compete in your event?
It all depends. They can show up anytime, anywhere.
Okay.
Anyway, they can knock on your door because there's different ways that they can show up. Sometimes it's the blood testing. Sometimes it's the pee testing. Usually they won't bother you when you're in training. They'll catch you before or after. There are guidelines around that, but you're on deck for that at any time, right? Whether it's after your event, once it's all done, typically the Canadians get chosen because we're really clean, right? It's a good thing. I don't know. For me, it worked out in my favor because I had two events. I did the 500 meter. So for me, that was the warm up. It was two laps around the track, 500 meters, half a kilometer. And I was the random athlete that was chosen. And into doping control, I went, like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. You can show up at my house. They have. And gave them the sample. And it was really cool because Anna Mears was there. 19-year-old Aussie wonder kid. I've watched her since she was 14 years old at the Commonwealth Games. And she had set an Australian record, a world record, and Olympic record at 19 years old. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like, what was I doing when I was 19? I wasn't doing cycling or anything like that. And I asked to see her medal because I thought, like, one, I was so happy for her, but two, I thought, I want to see what this thing looks like. And I was holding it and my hand, Jason, it got so warm and the energy from it, you have no idea. And just like, I was absolutely speechless. And I handed it to her and I said, thank you. She was the random doping control athlete when we finished the sprints, which was 3 days. And she goes, Lorianne, I should never have given you my gold medal when we were in doping control after I won the 500. I said, well, why's that? She says, you ruined my set. Because her goal was two Olympic gold medals. She got a bronze and she got a gold.
She actually thought handing you the medal somehow impacted her?
Well, she thought about it afterwards going, well, maybe I shouldn't have done this.
Oh, wow.
And it's just, she was she's an incredible woman. She's gone off to do so many great things with Australia and the Olympic team. She's an incredible woman. She's an incredible athlete. And just, she was one of those athletes that got into the system as a 14-year-old. I mean, maybe she was in it beforehand. I don't know, because they have the Australia Institute of Sport. And she's just an awesome woman, awesome athlete, on the bike, off the bike. And she's just doing really great things.
Now, we get there, a month out, and I was listening to Nathan MacKinnon do an interview. I can't remember what day it was, and he was talking about, for him, he actually lifts heavy weights, very low reps on game days, because it makes him feel like stronger. He's been reading up on it and gets him stronger.
Yep.
So the training regime for athletes, because your whole goal is to ramp up and be at your peak at the Olympics, right? That's the whole goal. And like, it's crazy because it's like a 4-year goal, right? And yeah, you have every year, but that's ultimately the goal. You go to the World Championships, but it's still not the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So now you're a month out, Lorianne. How much training are you doing? Like, would you be doing like MacKinnon does, heavy weights, but like low reps? What do you think, athletes, like, what's the best? And does it vary from sport to sport on how you lift weights?
I think it varies from sport to sport because it all depends on, are you like a sprinter, explosive athlete, or are you endurance? Like the hockey games, those are endurance.
Like the marathon runners aren't lifting a lot of heavy weights.
No. And this is the interesting part is 28 days out from today's is opening ceremony's first day. And you're actually wanting to go the opposite way. You're wanting to taper because you have to go and reduce the amount. Number one, it makes you bananas in your head because it's like, well, I'm used to go, go, go all the time. So it's actually reducing it. And this is where less is more.
Okay.
But then as you start to get about a week out, that's when you start to ramp it up again. I'm thinking with McKinnon there with just the, you know, heavy weights, a couple low reps, there's a certain feeling associated with him that puts him instantly into that winner's circle, that champion mindset. It's not going to take away from his workouts or his performance when it comes to ice time. And it's just there's a fine line. A lot of athletes, they end up piling more and more and more. And this is part of the problem I see with sport, amateur sport, is some of the sports haven't decided who is going. Like, look at the women's team. They get announced today, 28 days out. You're typically at a deficit because it's not giving you a lot of time.
But they're playing right now in the PWHL, right? Most of their players.
They are. And part of that is preparation. So if you prepare as if you're going, it's part of your preparation, which is a really, really good thing. But if you're not really sure, it's that, you know, doubt can jump in, or it's like, no, I can go. And I've always said to all my athletes, prepare as if you're going. Make that decision in your mind that you're going to perform at your best, play at your best, because this is where the mental game takes over versus the physical game. And this is where, as you're coming off of the physical performance, your mental stuff does not necessarily ramp up. You don't necessarily overdo it or tack on 10 more 5-minute segments of going through and running through, you know, the drills that you're doing or the moves, the maneuvers, whatever it is it's business as usual. You end up doing distraction therapy a lot more. So one, to calm the monkey mind, and number two, to still keep you in the game where, yeah, you are hungry. And this is the time where you really have to hold back on the physical performance. Don't overanalyze it from the mental performance, because you'll blow your mind cells out and you'll tire yourself out even more. But it's just schedule yourself so you know where you are, what you're doing throughout the day, so that your mind is at bay and it's okay.
Is there one Olympic sport that you watch closest at the Winter Olympics?
All of them. I'm usually glued to, you know, the live streams, whatever I can.
But is there one you like better?
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think so.
Did you ever do any winter sports?
Tobogganing, but I don't think that's, you know, anything like luge.
Yeah, I guess you're going to lose.
Or
yeah.
Skeleton.
But not really. You're more so. Like, if you could have done another sport at the Summer Olympics, is there one you were like, I wish I would have, like, been. Because it's hard to commit to multiple sports, right?
It
it's
is.
Just, it's very hard to do. Like, you know, Claire Hughes did it later on, which is ridiculous. Like, you know, multi-sport.
But it's not ridiculous.
No, but
she started with speed skating.
Yeah, it just
she
shows
started.
That she's still pretty skilled, though, right?
Oh,
like,
my
to do
gosh,
speed skating
absolutely.
And cycling. And I could see how, you know, like the leg strength you need in both, right?
But it's complementary.
Yes, for
it's
sure.
Like winter,
yeah.
summer,
if you
winter,
knew
summer.
How to, if you knew how to skate, right?
Yeah.
Like, skating is a, you know, riding a bike is a skill. Like, most of us can ride a bike. Now, most of us can't ride a bike, like, at an elite level, of course, right? Mm-hmm. And but skating still requires some, like, you can't just pick up skating. Like, you could be, if you got, if you're really strong.
You could.
Yeah.
I thought you could. I went out with Jane Lagasse and we were in Wainwright and we were on a rink outdoors. And I'm like, oh, this isn't that hard. I got on and I think I wiped out about 50 times.
Yeah.
And, you know, you take the slap shot and I totally missed the puck. And it's like, yeah, that's a lot harder. And it's like you watch these athletes and it's not the first time they've done it. But because they've been doing it for so long, it's in them. And that's what we all hope, you know, as armchair athletes or recreational sport athletes. And it's just, you know what, get out there, try it. Get out there and try it, because it's a lot harder than you think.
Like, there are some sports that you can pick up later on in life, because, like, skating's a very skill. Like, it's a skill to be able to skate, right?
It is.
Now the thinking, the game, and the quick twitch muscles, well, that's, you know, that's what it is. That's part of it. But if you don't have the skating background, it's kind of hard to. But we see in football, lots of people get football, lots of people in soccer, in cycling, right? Speed skating. Well, not speed skating, but cycling. And, you know, skiing's another one that I don't – Like, I don't think you could do, like, I'm going to start skiing at a later age. Like,
you can, but it usually doesn't end up very well.
It doesn't end up very well. Like, I actually saw a video today of Bodhi when he lost a ski and he skied down the whole mountain on one ski. And on the course. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. And that was not X Games.
No.
It was just. Sometimes it happens, but then look at all the training that he's done, right? It's just like the
proprioceptor muscles. You can just see his balance and everything. And I was just like, you know how hard that is? Like,
it's extremely
hard.
It's extremely hard on two skis, let alone just one.
Yeah, like that was one of the coolest videos I think I put up on my Instagram. And I was just like, I can't believe this. Like, you know, you're watching him and how he's even turning. And then he's trying to accelerate over. And I'm just, and he's on like a mountain, like right on the track. Yep. And I was looking at his time. And his time ended up being like 5 seconds slower than what the other guy. Five. That's it on one ski. I'm like, this is unreal.
Yep.
Like that was one of the most unique athletic things I've ever seen.
Totally.
Yeah.
I saw a video cycling wise downhill rider, and his chain broke right at the start, so he could not pedal, and he ended up winning the event just because of how he flowed into it, how he moved, his balance and everything, and it's just nuts. So it's like,
it must have been a pretty steep hill.
It was. Well, it's downhill. It's DH. So it's really, really crazy steep. And he's doing all these jumps.
So then I ask afterwards, do they need the pedals when they do downhill now?
They need the pedals, but they don't necessarily need the chain.
Yeah.
The chain, right?
The chains. Yeah, the pedals are for balance, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like for that drive. And it's just like, it's the core. It's the balance. And it's just, you just give her everything that you can and hope for the best.
Lorianne, great stuff. We will chat with you next Friday.